Hello and welcome Behind the Marquee, the podcast where we talk about movies and what's going on behind the scenes at the Michigan Theater. My name is Nick Aldrink, and I am the programming and media coordinator with the Michigan Theater Foundation. I'm joined by two guests who work with me here. Please introduce yourselves.
I'll go
Ellen.
First.
Oh, Sarah. Oh,
okay.
Sarah, you introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. I am Sarah Escalante. I'm the Director of Programming and Communications here at the Michigan Theater Foundation.
And you can tell this is not scripted because of moments like that. My name is Ellen Putney Moore. I am the Director of Sponsorship and Head of Member Experience here at the Michigan Theater Foundation.
Thank you both for being here. And yes, this is not scripted, and this is also the first episode I've done since September.
So, and for Ellen.
And for me.
Ellen's Yay. First time here, yes.
It is an honor and a privilege.
It is great to be back talking about movies with my coworkers. And like all other movie discussion podcasts right now, we're talking about the 2022 Oscar nominations. There's lots of opinions being thrown around this year. And I think we all still need to catch up with a bunch. So this is how the discussion is going to work. We've each come to the table with one nomination we're really happy to see, one nomination that we're disappointed didn't come up, the snubs, if you will, and one prediction about a win or something that we think is going to happen during the Oscar ceremony. So let's get started. I'll kick things off. The nomination that I am really excited to see was Kristen Stewart for Spencer. Spencer is a really unique film. It's thoughtful and touching. It's one of my favorites of the year. I wasn't surprised that it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. I think it has too many things to say about a person who can't speak for herself, and that comes with a lot of opinions and maybe some controversy. So I wasn't surprised that it wasn't nominated in that category. But Stewart, she's been delivering some really great performances from Oliver Assayi for, you know, The Personal Shopper and Clouds of Sils Maria, but she's still very much remembered for her early years for those Twilight films. And she does not get the respect that she deserves. So I was really happy to see this nomination come through. Hopefully people will start to take her more seriously because she brought a life to Diana, who is a person that we've only ever really known through tabloids or rumor or speculation. So she kind of took this character on in a way that we've never seen her. And maybe it's a way that she wasn't in real life. We can't really know that. Because of course she's not around today, but I just felt that that performance was really special. And like I said, I think that this is a new era for Kristen Stewart that I hope comes about.
I think you make a really good point about the movie itself. It was the Kristen Stewart show to me.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, oh, I'm sorry. There were other people. There was a storyline. it was the Kristen Stewart movie. So I absolutely agree with you. I see why it wasn't, in my eyes, nominated, because she kind of transcended it. You were going to see a masterclass by Kristen Stewart. I do wonder, you know, does she get ignored by the Academy, or has she in the past, because she's a magnificent actress, but, and I'm going to be real with you, she's an awkward human being. She's someone who really likes acting, but doesn't like the hoopla around it. And I think in past years, I think that's really been a negative for her. So again, I'm very, very thrilled. And I'm also thrilled to just see an actor who's like, hey, I like to do this. The rest of this is a little weird and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Especially considering, the politics of the Academy Awards. We all like to think that it's all merit-based alone, but it's not.
Right.
They're on political campaigns, and yeah, it completely comes down to that. And you're right. Yeah, Kristen Stewart is kind of an awkward human being, and she doesn't make those late night TV circuits very well.
Right.
But yeah, you're definitely right about that. Let's continue with Sarah. What was something, a nomination that you're really happy to see?
Mine was definitely Coda, which If you've talked to me over the past year, I've probably recommended that you watch it. It was one of those films that charmed me from the start of Sundance 2021. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really great family drama. So I was expecting it, and I was glad that it made the Best Picture cut. And I was also really excited for the dad, who is the first male deaf actor to be nominated for the Best Supporting Actor nom. So yeah, it was one of those ones that just put a smile on my face right away.
Yeah.
So I'm super thrilled. It's also Apple's first kind of jump into the Oscar world for Best Picture, which I think we're all still trying. We're all used to these streaming services now being, you know, a player in the game. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out too. So I hope it allows it to have a little bit of a wider release for this film, because I do not think most people have Apple TV unless like me and got it with your phone. So
I was gonna say, or you're like me who got it with your phone, but I don't know how to watch it. I don't have like an Apple TV player unless it on my phone. I don't know how to watch it.
I'm such a Mac house that I haven't even realized that is of course a possibility out there.
But I agree with you. It's great to see such an accessible film, and it's such a like a nice film be nominated for the Oscars. Yes. There's always so many prestige dramas that for the average person out there, like what I want to watch today, they're not going to put on The Power of the Dog, most likely. Something that's a little dark and looming and depressing. They want to watch something nice, and it's great to see those films get nominated.
Yes, it's almost like I love the ritual of the Oscar shorts. When they come out, you go and you see them, and there's just this excitement that I personally, and I know talking to other members, especially at the theater, they love as well, but you always walk away just being like, oh, that was intense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I loved that about Coda, that it was just, it had its moments that made you tear up, but then you were smiling walking away from this movie, which, we need some of that.
You. I agree. And mine, I'm changing up my answer, guys. Throwing a spanner into the works. Because I didn't read the entire instructions. I said movie, but in any category. So that's all right. Reading comprehension, I'm still working on, guys. I was delighted to see Jessica Chastain for The Eyes of Tammy Faye. That movie barely got any love. Listen, it was camp. You know, and someone who lived in New York until recently loves a good drag queen. Tammy Faye set the standard for drag queens, truly. But Jessica Chastain played her with so much heart, you know, really made us sympathetic to a person who may or may not have bilked people out of millions. You know, they kind of make it seem like her husband did most of that and she had no idea. But, you know, the truth, I'm sure, is a bit murkier, but really gave her a lot of heart, made her a sympathetic character, despite all the face paint, despite all the lashes, despite the prosthetics on her face. You know, she chewed every piece of scenery that was there in a different way than I would say Lady Gaga did. I'd say Lady Gaga did it the same way, but in a less, not intelligent, but nuanced way. Jessica Chastain, you know, you wanted her to chew the scenery and she gave it to you, and the costumes, and Andrew Garfield was also excellent in it. And I think he got overlooked a lot in that film, but thankfully he's been nominated for Tick, Tick, Boom. But really seeing Jessica Chastain there, I don't think she's going to win, and I'm sad about that. But I was grateful that she was nominated because it truly was a tour de force performance.
Yeah.
I just rewatched that and I was reminded again at how strong she was through that.
And it could have easily become just a grotesque caricature.
Yes,
it really got, and she walked that line, I thought, beautifully. Like, she gave you what you wanted, which is outrageous, but it had heart behind it.
In a similar fashion to Lady Gaga and House of Gucci, I thought that both films were fine. Like if you're to remove them from it, it would be such a forgettable film.
But
with them in it, they made it something memorable and great. Yeah. They held the movie themselves. Yeah.
I would agree.
So getting into, speaking of, I'm not talking about Lady Gaga, but speaking of snubs, we're going to talk about the nominations that we are disappointed didn't come up. And for mine is Nicolas Cage for Pig.
Yeah, I want to hear you defend this, Nick.
I fully support you, Nick.
It's not that I'm surprised it didn't come up. This is a film that came out last summer, which never bodes well for nominations. But I really thought that performance was memorable enough. It was Pig was such a soft, meditative, thoughtful film with a plot that, walking in, if no one had told you about this film, if you had only seen the trailer and everything, this film was playing with your expectations, especially with Cage in that lead role, because it turned out everyone was walking in like thinking this was going to be like John Wick with Nicolas Cage and with a pig. But it was really almost a demand for you to just slow down and take a breath. It wanted you to come in expecting something, but it really wanted to sit you down and have a talk with you about is like, what are you doing with your life? In the final moments of this feature, it gives you a chance to just sit in silence with Nick Cage. And there's a song playing over the top. I can't remember what that song is, but you just feel his presence on screen. He's just demanding your attention and care. And I just thought that was really special to see, especially for an actor like Cage, who I don't think is allowed to be taken seriously anymore, despite his prolific career of really great films. Kind of like Stewart in a way. I just thought that was a different performance from a person who we think that we know. And I was disappointed it didn't come up.
I don't ever want to sit in silence with Nicolas Cage. I would just like to say that. He's a great actor. You are right. He does not get the respect he deserves. I think his bizarre behavior in the past like decade or so has not helped that. But yeah, that is, I'm like, oh, that sounds like a rough afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh no, to Nick's point, sometime if it works and it's there, push play. It is very meditative.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You've piqued my interest.
But I think, Nick, you're right. I think I feel like we've talked about it before too, but there are certain actors and actresses that just have this, they're not able to put the mask on of the character we're looking for, their self, or and sometimes a role they had just continues to be what we see, what we hear, regardless of what film they are in and story they're trying to portray to us. And I think he and Stewart are definitely two that I would name within that category. Yeah. And it's unfortunate for them because you can tell how much they love this craft.
Absolutely. Sarah, what's one that you were disappointed didn't come up?
Mine was The Rescue, which was a National Geographic documentary, and it was about the rescue of in Thailand of the soccer team stuck in the cave. And if you haven't seen this, it also made its way around on the film festival circuit last year. And I know we played it for a while. I think it got a decent theatrical release, but it's just really touching. Yeah, it's also another one. This one, not so much on the happy. I mean, there is a rescue. But it's just intense. And they had this nice way of using animation throughout to show some of the intense just struggles that the rescuers had to go through to get to where these boys or their soccer coach was. It was just beautifully done. It's from the Free Solo directors. It seemed like an obvious nomination for best documentary. So that was one I was very surprised did not show up on the list on Tuesday.
Yeah, me too. I hadn't even realized that it wasn't on there. That I have to go back and look at there's one of the documentary features that I haven't seen, but they're all really great films. But yeah, that was one that we both saw that at TIFF, right, Sarah?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one, it's very much like Free Solo, if you remember, just the tension of Free Solo, even though it's a story that you know how it, well, I guess Free Solo is a little more obvious how it ends because you know you're not going to watch a guy die on screen.
But you hope not.
I guess this is from a news story from a few years ago. So if you're familiar with that, you know how it ends. But But even considering that, just the tension that it holds you with was really incredible.
Yeah, I think it was one where we both were like, did you watch it yet? Like, you need to watch this one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it happens. But definitely a film not on the list, but still worth everyone out there going to see if you haven't.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you, I believe it's on Disney Plus. I'm not sure if you mentioned that. But
I think they're attached with National Geographic.
Yeah. So if you want to check that out, see it on Disney Plus. Highly recommended from the both of us.
Yeah. And I was going to say, Sarah was so passionate about it that I did see it because I was like, the sense of claustrophobia might do me in. But it was spectacular.
It's like they use the animation in that way that I felt like removed that part.
Yeah. So clever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ellen, what's one that you were disappointed in? Come up.
Yeah. So I've got two. First is Being the Ricardos.
Yes.
Being the Ricardos, I do think was snubbed. I think it was Aaron Sorkin at his best.
Oh, I love him.
His West Wing days. It was snappy, quick, clever, funny, heartbreaking. Nicole Kidman's face with the prosthetics, occasionally a little jarring, but she was brilliant. I mean, everybody gave her crap about that. I thought, and I never once looked at my watch. Never once during that whole movie. And that's generally how I judge things. Whereas Spider-Man, I looked at it three times. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but it just, when it ended, I was like, I'm so glad I saw that. That was excellent movie making. That was, you know, you think it's ending happy and then it twists and it was really great. I can't even believe he wasn't nominated in Best Original Screenplay for that. Because that was the phenomenal. And everybody in it was magnificent as well. There wasn't a weak link amongst them. And my second is The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's been done so many times. You know, we had the Marianne Cotillard, Michael Fassbender one that was a couple of years ago. I don't know, but we've got Denzel Washington. We've got Frances McDormand. And we've got this incredibly stylized black and white production. I had to, within the first 15 minutes, as soon as that witch came on the screen, remind myself to breathe. Wow. It was so intense. And to me, it spoke to me. It was theatrical. It was like watching sort of the Royal Shakespeare Company, you know, like a live stream. And I don't know if that was just not enough for people. I really, it was so striking. But it was a lot. I mean, it was intense and it never lets up. But I think that's exquisite filmmaking. But if you haven't seen it, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but that witch and how they do the witches was so creative to me. And Joel Coen is also beloved by the Oscars, as is Frances McDormand. And I was so surprised. I was glad Denzel got a nomination, but Frances did not.
Yeah.
You know.
That is one that I still have to catch up with, but I was still surprised that she didn't show up in that list of performers. Like, what's the Oscars without a Frances McDormand nomination? Yes. Really?
I mean, truly, it's, you know, by what is it, by California state law, it's Meryl Streep and Frances McDormand and Olivia Colman now as well.
Yes.
I was joking. They were like, oh, so sorry. Only one actress over the age of 40. And this year it's Olivia Colman. Thank you so very much for applying. But truly, if you want to see something that is like going to a live performance in the feel that it gets you and how dramatic it is, then The Tragedy of Macbeth. But it's not a light evening. But neither are a lot of these Oscar nominations.
But I definitely agree with you about being the Ricardos. I thought that was such fun is the wrong word, because it has its fun moments, also has its really down moments.
Engaging.
Especially, I just thought Javier Bardem and Nicole Kidman completely blew me away. They may not have looked well. Nicole Kidman's prosthetics didn't definitely made her look more like Lucille Ball than what the critics were attacking her for. I guess I say critics, I mean the critics on the internet. everyone's a critic, but they. Especially Javier Bardem, who looks nothing like Desi Arnaz, but he has the power to him. That was because like you look at Desi Arnaz and you don't think of someone who was like a force of nature. He just kind of he's very handsome, he's very charming. But when you get to hear about Desi Arnaz as a businessman, he was ruthless, he was powerful, and just that's just the presence that Javier Bardem imbues without even trying. That's just who he is. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was brilliant casting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So predictions. I'm going to be talking about West Side Story. I think that Ariana DeBose, who I believe is favored to win the best supporting actress category, but I'm going to predict that she is she's going to be the first performer to win Best Actress for a role that another actress already won for. And I'll double down on that. And I think that West Side Story is going to be the first remake of a Best Picture winner as well to also win Best Picture.
What about the costume design too, right?
Costume design. I think
they can pull that through.
Yeah. I think West Side Story, I think, is going to have a big night. It's going to take a lot for Best Picture. It's going to take a lot to bring down Power of the Dog. But if any film has a chance, it's West Side Story, because I'm siding with the idea that Academy voters are going to vote with their heart. These are two very different films. West Side Story is very life affirming, while Power of the Dog is not quite as much. Walking out of the theater to that film, I just personally felt the most joyful that I have in a long time at the movies. And that was a great feeling.
Despite the ending?
Well, I mean, it is a sad ending. It is a sad ending, but I just think that the story of that film comes away with such optimism. And I that was a great feeling to have after these past couple of years seeing that. So that is my bold prediction. West Side Story has a big night and takes
dancing
down
in the streets.
Dancing in the streets. Yeah, colorful costumes. I was blown away by that movie. I wasn't expecting to hate it. It's still West Side Story. It's still the music of Stephen Sondheim. But I was not expecting to be blown away by that one like I was. Sarah.
I have two for this one.
Ooh.
Yeah. First, I think Flea, which is this just powerful and also a documentary that I stress, if you have not seen this, you should watch it. I think I've watched it three times now. And it is not, it's a story of a child refugee from Afghanistan and his whole journey and then his reveal to his partner about this journey. So it's not a happy type film, but it is so well done that it's just, when I see it, I watch it again. But it is the first time we're seeing the whole trifecta nomination for taking Best Animated Feature, Best Documentary Feature, and Best International Feature Film. And I think it can do it. And I'm hoping it can do it.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a prediction I'm laying out there into the universe to see if it can happen. And another one is we have in both the Best Actor and Actress and Best Supporting Actor and Actress, we have real life married couples nominated. And I think it would just bring myself a great smile. And I feel like their expressions and stage performance would be fun to see if we see them win. So we have Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plum, or Plumin, right?
From Clemens?
Clemens, The Power of the Dog, who he's in so much.
Yeah.
He is also such a wonderful actor. And I just love that I'm seeing his just rise in that.
Yeah.
So I think it would be great. I think it's first for both of them.
Yeah.
So that would just be awesome. And then we have Penelope and Javier in there. Or Parallel Mothers and Being the Ricardo. So I think it would just add an excitement if we had these couples win for both those categories.
I had four
of those.
I hadn't put that together. That's really nice. Yeah. Ellen.
Yeah. So I just want to say, because we'll get emails because we have a very engaged audience. West Side Story was composed by Leonard Bernstein, but Stephen Sondheim was the lyricist. Stephen Sondheim was the lyricist. But you could argue they both composed the music because the two go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But I just know we're going to get emails because we have very, very smart listeners. So I'm putting that up there.
We'll send them all to Ellen.
We'll send them all. Oh, God. Oh, God. But you get to interact with me. I'm a good time. But it's hard because at this point we've had a very public Golden Globes. We've had the SAGs. We haven't had the BAFTAs yet. For me, this was a hard prediction to make because we don't have those indicators, and Golden Globes is not being taken as seriously for good reason.
Yeah.
So it's hard to sort of gauge if that is accurate or not. So I decided to go safe and say what I wish would happen. There are so many great musical nominations, but Diane Warren is sort of the Susan Lucci of the Oscars. She has been nominated 12 times. She shows up gamely every year. I'd love to see her win it. One, as a woman in this mostly male dominated field, you know, and two, this will be the 13th time. 13th time is the charm, I would say, for her. I enjoy Diane Warren. She's written some great songs. She doesn't always write great Oscar nominated songs. As a former musician, it's sort of middle of the road. But again, I want her to have that moment because she is consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason she's nominated. I may think it's middle of the road, but it strikes a chord in people. You know, I think Lin-Manuel Miranda may have a chance to EGOT it on this one? I do. Yeah. But it'd be nice to see Diane have her moment in the sun.
This is one of the films that I've not seen yet, actually.
Same. Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Yes. This one I haven't. This one I have not. I her body of work is always so impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, she's written the hits for Celine Dion. Mm-hmm. How can you deny that genius?
I'm rooting for her now.
True, yeah. Right? As well you should. As well you should. She has written some of the best songs. I think she also wrote for Aerosmith. Don't Want to Miss a Thing. I believe that's her.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So these songs you think of as being campy, fun classics, you know, that we grew up with, a lot of times Warren is behind them.
Interesting. I am not as familiar with her work, but yeah, I'm also not familiar with it's four good days.
And it looks like it's on Hulu for all you subscribers out there.
She's got a tough competition. Have her Beyonce, Lin-Manuel, Van Morrison, and Billie Eilish. Wow, yeah. But career Oscars happen. It's maybe this is her time.
They do. Oh, I would like to mention she is also, because I'm Googling here, because we can do that on a podcast. She wrote If I Could Turn Back Time.
Give her the Oscar right now.
Or I'd say, on the other hand, give it to Beyonce and thumb your nose at the Grammys, who has never respected her the way they should. That's what I'm saying.
It's a win-win for everybody.
Correct. Give it to a woman.
Well, thank you so much. I think that was a refreshing Oscar conversation.
A great discourse. Yeah. A great discourse.
Yes.
I think we're excited. Like, I feel like the Oscars is moving into this. Do you really care anymore?
Yeah.
This year, strangely, I happened to be up when they started doing the live streaming for the nominations. Mm-hmm. You know, so I put my Wordle aside and I actually watched it, which I haven't done that in, I can't even remember when the last time. And I did feel some excitement as they were populating the names of what was coming up. So I'm hoping that this ceremony is fun.
Yeah.
And that we walk away with that, because I think we haven't had that in a while.
Yeah. It sounds like they're going to have a host this year. They haven't announced the host, I believe, yet. But it kind of feels like the Oscars are back.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that might fizzle away. But yeah. I kind of hope it lingers. I hope it stays.
For us, it doesn't.
Yeah.
For us, it will not.
Yeah.
No. There are great films to be seen. So that is one, regardless of what folks are thinking about the ceremonies itself. Yeah. I feel like it's really great to revisit a lot of these films that are worth seeing, especially in the theater. So always fun to be able to bring them back to the big screen.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we can boast that even when the Oscar nominations were announced, that we had played all the nominations at the Michigan and State Theater at some point in the past year, which was exciting.
And soon we'll have played all of the international feature film nominations. Mm-hmm. So that's also great.
And we're also going to be we've already brought back Power of the Dog in Belfast, and people can expect to see more come in the next month or so. So keep an eye out, mishtheater.org. Check it out. As we start to wrap this up, it's time we get to our movie magic moments of the week. And regular listeners know that this is the part where we recommend something to you that we have seen recently, which, as we say, reminded us why we love movies. This could be something from movies or television. Mine is actually in the television side of things. So I'll kick us off. Regular listeners also know that I am a big fan of Star Wars. So I'm going to talk about the season finale of The Book of Boba Fett, which were...
I haven't started.
It released last Wednesday. The final episode came from Robert Rodriguez, known for his work with like Planet Terror, with Tarantino, Machete, El Mariachi.
I was going to say... Wait a minute. Yeah. Interesting.
Lots of films. He's known for a very stylistic approach to violence. He's known for shock and awe, wild fight choreography. So when he comes into Star Wars, he's almost coming in with one hand tied behind his back because you just can't do that on Disney Plus. This is the third episode of Star Wars television that he's directed. He helped reintroduce the character of Boba Fett in the last season of Mandalorian. He did the season premiere of The Book of Boba Fett, and he was given the finale of this new show. So in lieu of that, like I said, that typical brand of action that he usually does, he did things for Star Wars that was so weird and wild for that universe. He put all his creative energy into just giving you something that you've never seen before. It's just something that's going to make your head explode. He's like a kid in a sandbox playing with his Star Wars action figures. And he's like, and then this guy comes in, and then, oh no, they're going to fight. And oh no, there's a Wookiee. It's just so bonkers and off the wall that I was on board every second of the way. Of course, with anything that's new and different, Star Wars fans are going to have opinions. But I thought it was so refreshing to see just that type of imagination on screen. And I think that it's only going to inspire other filmmakers to come in and do stuff with this universe that have never been done before. It's going to let it grow and evolve. And that just makes me very excited. So that's my movie magic moment. The finale of The Book of Boba Fett.
Oh, I was hoping you'd say Housewives, but that was a pretty good second choice.
Sarah, what do you got?
I have two again. One is short because yesterday we were testing and getting ready for tonight's late night screening of Star Wars Episode II.
Yeah.
And I was able to catch a bit of it. And I was just reminded again of just the awe of seeing Star Wars up there on the big screen. I sent Nick a little clip. I hope Disney's not listening out there. But it's just so powerful. And so I love that. It like gives you that feeling. It's a movie that every time I was telling Nick too, you see it up there and you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So that will be my theater one. But TV wise, also have that. My husband and I started watching Will Arnett's new comedy crime series on Netflix. And it's kind of this whole half of the cast is scripted and then they throw in a celebrity. And that's they amazing. Are not scripted. They are improvising and they are trying to figure out a whodunit. So it's wild and silly. And I feel like I'm just two episodes in, so I still got to jump in. But I feel like it's something that people are going to love and stick around for a while. So check it out.
I saw the trailer for that.
Murderville. Yes, on Netflix.
I was on board with it as soon as I saw the trailer. That looks like so much fun. I still have to check it out.
It's clever.
Ellen, what do you got?
Yeah, so mine is also TV. I've been really enjoying Abbott Elementary. Which is along the same vein as, it's not really The Office, but Parks and Rec. And Parks and Rec was one of my absolute favorites. It was just a joyous comedy that had a heart of gold. And this is the same thing. So it takes place in an inner city, Philadelphia elementary school. And it's really about the teachers and the challenges they face. And it shines a real light on, you know, not having enough books, not having enough supplies, but makes it funny and charming and heartwarming. So it's not doom and gloom, you know, so, but also making you aware of, you know, how much these sort of inner city schools are left behind when it comes to supplies and money. And it's so clever. And it's got that, it's the guy's name is Mike. Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know his last name, but he did The Office and then Parks and Rec.
Oh,
and there's
Mike,
a style that he has. Sure. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank Nick coming through where they'll look at the camera, you know, at a funny moment.
Yes.
And that just kills me. It truly kills me. But, you know, these teachers, there's the new teacher who's earnest. There's the teacher who's been there for decades. There's the, you know, principal who has no idea what she's doing. There's the earnest white, you know, Teach for America kid.
I was going to say, they have to have...
They do. Who's trying to, like, you know, be woke. And
yes.
But he does it in a charming way that, you know, it's not really a microaggression. I highly recommend this show. It's only, you know, 30 minutes and you wish it was longer, which I always think is a good,
oh, great,
a good sign. It's really along the lines of Ted Lasso and Parks and Rec and those kind of like feel good, but with a heartwarming message TV shows.
Interesting. I've seen that title on my screen, mm-hmm. but I didn't know anything about it. I had no idea it was a Mike Schur joint. How do you watch it? Is it streaming in somewhere?
It's streaming and it is on, I believe, and I'm so sorry, Abbott Elementary. I should know. I believe it's ABC.
ABC, okay.
So probably on Hulu.
Probably on Hulu then, yeah.
Yes, it's ABC. I watch it on Hulu. I don't watch it, you know, especially with the Olympics going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I should talk about. Nathan Chen winning gold finally after the last Olympics were kind of a bust and just being dominant throughout was magnificent. I stayed up till 2:30 a.m.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
a person who's in bed by 9:30. And he's perseverance personified. And, you know, he's doing all this while going to Yale at the same time.
Oh,
so
wow.
Nathan Chen and Abbott Elementary.
I heard they had an NPR interview with him and he sounded like it was like the first time ever he had won something. His enthusiasm was great.
Yeah.
Like it's like, you know,
anyway, he never takes it for granted. He's got a good head on his shoulders. He, you know, and he wins. And I'm so interested in that mindset of someone. Anyway, we're going off topic of movies, but Nathan Chen, Abbott Elementary, my two favorite things right now.
That is my weekend. I've watched 0 minutes of the Olympics yet. That's my weekend plans to catch up on that.
I am not a sports person, but I freaking love the Olympics. I will sit there and be like, luge? Absolutely. Tell me more. I want to learn about this. Spandex and an icy, you know, downward drag. Great.
And
sign me up.
And going back to Mike Schur, born in Ann Arbor. And
I didn't know that.
I don't believe he was raised here, but he was born in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Wow.
But yeah, a little fun fact for you. So that is about does it for our discussion. Thank you all for listening. It is great to be back on the mic. Going forward, I'm hope to be putting these out on a bi-weekly basis. So, and start having larger conversations with the guests and contributors of the show so that you can get to know us better. And for further roundtable discussions like this one, it's my vision to start at some point broadcast these over Facebook Live so you can see what this looks like raw and unedited. And also let viewers listeners join in on the discussion as well. So be sure to follow the Michigan and State Theater on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find the Michigan Theater at Michigan Theater, the State Theater at State Theater A2, and that's theater spelled with an R-E. And of course, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating so that we can catch the ears of more listeners. Thank you to Matt Gauntlet and the Ann Arbor District Library for making sure these episodes drop on their channel. To email the show with suggestions or send us movie magic moments, comments, or even let us know if you want to be on the show yourself, reach out to us at btmpod@gmail.com. And the theme that you're listening to right now is Keith Mansfield's Morning Broadway, a classic library catalog recording. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Sarah, for joining me here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening and joining us behind the marquee.